When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold Blooded, the Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Like the police knew who he was before they got here.
From iHeart Podcasts.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
I'm Paul Pringle, an investigative reporter for the LA Times. Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now here's a highlight from Coast to Coast AM on iHeartRadio.
And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Len Kasten back with us. Joined the U.S. Air Force Aviation Cadet Program after graduating from Cornell University. While in the Air Force, he experienced his own UFO encounter that had a incredible effect on his life. And although he didn't realize until a few years later, while working in Washington, D.C. in the 60s, he felt drawn to join the National Investigations Committee on Aerial Phenomena, NICAP, that was founded by a fellow by the name of Donald Kehoe. And NICAP was the most prestigious organization in the country at the time investigating UFO phenomena. He now also writes for the New Dawn magazine, published in Australia and New Zealand. His latest work is called Dark Fleet. Len, welcome back. Looking forward to this one, my friend.
Hi, George. Nice to be back with you again.
How are you?
I'm great. I hope you are, too.
I am. I remember my little NICAP membership card when I was a kid. I joined that because I loved UFOs. It was great.
I know. It had some very, very distinguished people in it, like Helen Cutter and a few others.
Every time the mail would come and I'd get a little letter or something from them, I'd freak out.
I know.
It was fun.
Yeah, they were the first. They were really the first ones.
It's interesting how these organizations, as a young boy, have an effect on you when you grow up later in life. I mean, I never thought I'd be talking about them later on a broadcast show.
I know. Strange. Life is strange, isn't it, George?
It sure is. Sure is. Well, you did great with Alien World Order, the reptilian plan, and this one is amazing. I want to talk with you about a lot of stuff, Len, but let's talk about Dark Fleet and the Nazis. The war ends 1944-45, but what happens to the Nazis?
Well, they were still around.
They never stopped, did they?
Well, you know, Berlin was reduced to ashes. Germany was reduced to ashes, but the Nazis were not.
Well, we had Project Paperclip, where we brought in about 1,000 German scientists.
That's right.
And many of them had worked on the V2 program, which bombed Britain and London, killed thousands of people.
That's right.
Did these people stay Nazis, or did they change and become true Americans?
No, they were committed. They were still committed Nazis. That didn't change. They did work with Americans in Antarctica together. The aerospace companies worked together, but they didn't change. They didn't change, and that's why they ended up on Mars and the Moon instead of staying here. They could have stayed here if they wanted to.
I just watched an Amazon series, 10 parts, with Al Pacino called The Hunters.
Oh, yeah, that's great.
It's an amazing show, but in it, they depict Wernher von Braun, the father of our modern rocketry, a former German Nazi. He worked on the V2 program. In the worst light I have ever seen him, how could they get away with that?
Well, he was a great scientist, but he was still a very committed Nazi. He was a colonel. He was a colonel in the Nazi organization, and that didn't change.
Once a Nazi, always a Nazi?
Well, I think so. They had there was always a connection under the surface all the time. And his boss at Peenemünde came with him here. So they stayed together. But how could it be that a Nazi colonel responsible for killing thousands of people in London with his V-2 and B-1 bombers became the head of our space program?
I know. Did they sneak them into our country? Or what happened?
He came in with paperclip.
Okay, because it was either we get them or the Soviets get them.
That's right. And they were trying to scare us about communism and about socialism and all that. And that's why they couldn't go with Russia.
Are you convinced that the German scientists got our rocketry program up and running?
No, they had the opposite effect. They put the brakes on it.
Really?
Yeah, sure. They didn't want us to go. They didn't want us to go to the moon and Mars yet. They were already there.
They beat us to the moon?
Well, yeah, of course. Yeah, they were there in 1942.
Tell us about this.
1942, the first German landing on the moon was a German soldier. And from that point on, they started burrowing under the surface, and eventually they built what came to be known as the Lunar Operations Command, with 11 stories under the surface of the moon, and it's still there.
Where did you get this information?
Well, it's commonly known now among all the researchers now. Corey Good and all the people that connected with him, and David Wilcock,
mm-hmm.
Emery Smith. They claim to have already been to that location. They were taken there. Corey was taken there.
What kind of rocketry did they have to get them to the moon? I mean, did they have rockets the size of the Saturn V at the time? And how did they launch? And we didn't even know about it.
They had anti-gravity. They took the Hanabu, the so-called Hanabu disc. You've seen pictures of that, haven't
right?
You?
Right. They've had reverse technology.
They couldn't get there with rockets. In fact, Wernher von Braun's book called The Mars Project, written about that time, is all based on rocketry. Yet it was impossible for that to happen because the rockets were too small at that time. It wasn't until the Saturn V5 came along that they could get the heavy lifting that they needed for a trip to Mars and back. They used the Hanabu, Hanabu 3, which was anti-gravity.
Would von Braun have been part of their moon program?
No, he was not. He couldn't have been because he was more or less under armed guard here in the U.S. Anytime he left the base in New Mexico, he had to have an armed escort with him. But eventually, it was realized that he was very valuable. So in 1960, he became the head of NASA.
Oh, he sure did. He
yeah.
sure did, and was
Marshall Space Program, which was really the central part of NASA.
Now, when you say the Nazis went to the moon in 1942, did they launch or with their anti-propulsion system? I mean, did they leave from Germany or were they in Argentina? Where were they?
No, Antarctica. They had a base in Antarctica called Base 211.
They still may.
Yeah, and it was a very large base under the ice with huge caverns under the ice, and. And they also had plenty of land that was available for launching that wasn't covered with ice on the surface as well. So it wasn't hard for them to leave from Antarctica. And so it was the reptilians that really brought them there in the first place. When you consider that they took that trip to Antarctica, the first trip, in 1938 on that ship, the Schwabenland, when they were about to launch a war against Poland 1 year later, here they were sailing across 6,000 miles of ocean to a frozen wasteland that they didn't even know they could survive on.
Right.
It was an amazing story, really.
How many people did they end up taking to Antarctica and
well,
hiding?
Well, that first trip on the Schwabenland, you mean?
Yeah, and then subsequently, I bet they kept coming, right?
Yes, they were crossing the South Atlantic all the time, and we began to realize it at that time because we were monitoring some of their trips. But the first trip with the Schwabenland, probably only several hundred people. They were all scientists, though. They were almost all scientists of all stripes.
With that kind of technology, Len, how in the world did they lose the war?
They didn't lose the war. That's the point of the book. That's the point of my book. If they did
We think they lost the war.
They gave up, let's put it this way. They gave up Germany, the physical part of Germany, but they didn't give up the German Nazi spirit. That was still with them. And they took that to Argentina and to Antarctica.
Do you think Hitler survived?
Yes, I know. I'm sure he survived. And this is being seconded by a lot of other people, confirmed.
Argentina for him, I bet.
He went to Argentina.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, you've heard that before, haven't you?
Yes, I sure have.
Yeah. His house, the house that he lived in Argentina, he had Bormann build it for him in 1943.
It was a mansion.
It was, but it looked just like an alpine hunting lodge. It was a typically German design. And Brad Olson has been down there recently. Have you had him on your show?
Brad's been on he my Beyond Belief show, and I think he was on Coast once.
Well, I think he went there to the very place where Hitler had settled. He wanted to see it for me. Brad wanted to see him for himself.
That's an amazing story. Now, when you said that there's a German reptilian connection, tell me about that.
Well, I mean, that's where the Nazis got all their power. They got it from the reptilians, starting in 1933 in Germany.
And what system did the reptilians come from? What star system?
They came from Draco and Orion. But they were also living here before the humans even got here.
On our planet.
That's a story that's a long story in itself, and I did cover that in my last book, Alien World Order.
Right.
But they were here before the humans arrived, according to my research, according to the Robert Morningsky and others.
Well, wasn't the reptilian kind of confused for the devil then?
Well, some thought so because they dwelled in the fourth dimension. That's why they were not visible to us, which we call the astral realm. And so, supposedly, there are all kinds of demons down there as well. But they were not demons. They were just extraterrestrial.
All right. But with anti-gravity technology and the help of the reptilians, you say that the Nazis went to the moon in 42, and then they went on to Mars 3 years later.
That's right. That's exactly right. They started building their colony on Mars, but they encountered some very tough conditions on Mars.
What happened?
Well, there were two endogenous peoples living there. They had the insectoids were living there, and the so-called reptoids, which were sort of reptilian in nature, but they were different, and they were actually enemies of the reptilians themselves, and they were living on Mars when the Nazis got there, and the Nazis had to confront that when they got there.
And who won?
They did. The Nazis won.
They beat them?
Oh yeah, yeah. The insectoids, which by the way were a very intelligent race, even though they looked like insects.
Did they get wiped out?
Well, they actually nuked them.
The Nazis nuked them.
The Nazis nuked the insectoid colony in the northern part of Mars, the northern hemisphere, to get rid of them. And there was another colony in the southern portion of Mars that had no technology. They didn't have the technology of the northern.
Well, I know that we beat the Nazis by a hair getting the nukes when we did. So they must have had theirs right after that, I guess.
Well, a lot of people think that the first atomic bomb that we created was really a German bomb. There are some that say that.
That we may have stolen or something?
Yes, we got our hands on that technology. They were very deeply into it, and they really were ahead of us. In fact, our people who were working on the bomb project knew that, and there was a race there initially. But
what an amazing story, Len.
Yeah, really. They were ahead of us in so many ways, so many ways. But it's still remarkable that they would get on this journey and cross the Atlantic 6,000 miles without knowing what awaited them, with a full complement of scientists and educated people. These were not just adventurers. This was a cross-section, an entire cross-section of the German technology and the German economy.
And this is going to be their new life, basically, right?
Exactly.
Did they raise families there and everything else?
Well, they went back and forth. They developed a new submarine, too, that they could keep underwater for the entire crossing of the Atlantic. They call them milk cow submarines. They were huge. And it didn't have to surface. So with that, that's how they developed. They went back and forth to Antarctica and to Argentina.
That's how they got Hitler hidden away, isn't it?
Yes. Hitler was on that submarine in 1945.
God, what would that make him now? Of course, he'd probably be dead by now.
Well, he was
over 100.
I know that the entire country celebrated his 50th birthday with a huge bash. He was probably in his mid-50s at that point. I'm not sure.
When the war ended?
Yeah.
Yeah, and then that's, what, 75 years ago, 70 years ago, 80 years ago? Yeah, he'd be long gone by now, you would think.
He died in Argentina in 1962. He went to Argentina with his wife,
Eva
Braun, and he had two children, two daughters and his dog. He took the whole family with him, and she left him towards the end. She couldn't live with him anymore, and she left him alone, and she moved about 250 miles north of where he was living. So in the end, he died alone.
Was he a Nazi to the end?
Absolutely, he was fanatic. He was a fanatic.
It's too bad Simon Wiesenthal
couldn't. Yes, as far as we know.
Now, let's talk about some of these super soldiers that they helped try to create as well. What was their plan with that?
Well, they developed a very, very advanced and scientific facility on Mars. It was called the ICC. It was called the ICC, Intergalactic,
Corporate Conglomerate.
Corporate Conglomerate. And they had a very advanced scientific laboratory there, and they were creating cyborgs. You know what a cyborg is, right?
Right.
They were creating cyborgs.
Part human, part machine.
Right. I don't know if you've ever heard of Ileana Kapulnik.
I have not heard of that person.
Well, she was on Mars for 50 years, so she claims, and she worked at that cybernetics laboratory. And they were working on cyborgs. That was the main thing they were doing, because they had established a trade, a galactic trade in cyborgs. They were in demand. And
these cyborgs were the super soldiers, I assume.
Well, they were part human and part electronic, and they obeyed orders. And of course, they could build them up to amazing strength and amazing intelligence, and basically they were all controlled by a quantum computer.
Gosh, they were way ahead of us.
Oh yeah, way ahead. Quantum computing. Have you heard of Frank Chili? Do you know who he
yes,
is?
Yes, I've heard of him.
Well, have you listened to any of his?
He's got some things on YouTube.
He does. He has several. And one of the things he said was that the current technology that they had at that time was probably about 1,000 years ahead of ours.
My gosh.
I mean...
Are they still around?
Who?
The Nazis in Antarctica?
Yeah. Here's what happened. When they built a laboratory on Mars... That was what they wanted. They wanted a German-speaking civilization of their own. They didn't want to have to share it with the Americans anymore.
And they wanted it on Mars.
And they wanted it. Well, Mars was like the Wild West. They could go anywhere they wanted. And they were able to breathe the air there, believe it or not. It's really not that dense, the air. And they decided that would be their scientific headquarters, and that's... And that's where they created what we call the Dark Fleet. The Dark Fleet was their solar system police force. They had very advanced technology, very advanced ships, which became the Dark Fleet.
Listen to more Coast to Coast AM every weeknight at 1 a.m. Eastern and go to coasttocoastam.com for more.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
From iHeart Podcasts.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, everyone knew.
I'm Paul Pringle, an investigative reporter for the LA Times. Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, guys. Nancy Grace here, host of podcast Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. I've dedicated my life to fighting crime and helping crime victims. For a decade, I prosecuted violent felonies. Every day is a mission. Every day is a chance to stop crime and keep one more person safe. Listen to Crime Stories with Nancy Grace on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.